Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the first of the breakout sessions of the morning. Hopefully, everyone's nice and fresh after last night. If you're not, this topic no doubt will get you there. So today, our topic of conversation is from claims to change. The TAC doesn't just manage injuries; it saves lives. Now we've got. We're very fortunate to have Samantha Cockfield, the Executive General Manager for Road Safety at the TAC, and Kath Gobby, Executive General Manager of Clients at the TAC. Please make them feel welcome.
Thank you. Hi, I've been told not to go near that microphone. So I'm Kath, this is Sam. Who's got the... Can you do the clicker?
Yes. I can do the clicker.
So thanks for coming into our room and staying, because there was a change in room, not everyone has, and so the door's closed now, you're in. First I wanted to acknowledge the Turrbal and Yugara people of this amazing Meanjin land that we're on, and pay my respects to Elders past and present, extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people of all nations, and particularly those with us here today, acknowledge this land was never ceded. It always was. It always will be Aboriginal land. Right. So we were a bit of a late call up. So I am grateful that people have come to hear a little bit from us. And what it is I saw this information in this pack recently. I've been at the TAC for 18 months and am just sort of awed and inspired by this woman, Sam Cockfield, who
I've been at TAC for 35 years, so, you know.
Leading voice. She tells me there are other people that are, like, you know, better again, but in my mind she's the leading voice of road safety on the globe. And, you know, now I have this incredible opportunity to work with her. So for us today, the conversation's about a sort of a love letter from me to our ACT, because... Legit, we love it, for almost 40 years deep, and gosh, it's really beautiful. It's a love letter to Sam and Road Safety and just the incredible honour they give to every life lost in hope that we might prevent the next person, and a love letter to what we can do when we coordinate and bring our brains together to achieve something high purpose. So let's start just quickly with the ACT. I think that what I didn't realise was that I knew that we did amazing campaigns. You've seen, you know, Drink, Drive, Bloody Idiot, and obviously far more modern ones, that's showing my age. But I didn't actually realise that it was enshrined, our role in prevention and in emphasising accident prevention as well as effective rehabilitation is enshrined in our ACT and has been since day one. And this pack really goes into then that link, inextricable link that Sam and I have running our respective functions, claims and road safety, to meet the needs of Victorians, we hope for another 40 years to come, and we hope, of course, with far fewer deaths and accidents. But it starts with our ACT, and so that's a very short love letter to this incredible piece of legislation that is still serving us.
Yeah, I'd love to add to that, because I actually started on a graduate program, hence being here for 35 years, and it was the first thing I learnt. I spent a week learning about the ACT, and the fact that it's had very few changes over 40-ish years is just amazing, and it's really, as I say, it's embedded now in the Victorian community and delivering a lot of benefits. So we might just start on a little video and just an overview on us. Now let's just see if that... Yep.
At the Transport Accident Commission, our purpose is grounded in genuine care. Care for the lives of everyone who travels on Victoria's roads. Guided by our deep knowledge of road safety and our innovative strategies, we're building a future where every journey is a safe one. Each year, we provide support to more than 40,000 people who've been injured on our roads, empowering them to own their recovery journey to get their lives back on track. While most will make a full recovery, others may need our support for the rest of their lives. Our vision is clear. We're not just aiming for safer roads and stronger recoveries today. We're committed to delivering value to the Victorian community, now and for future generations.
It's also a bit of a love song to Victoria, that. Yeah.
Okay. So sales pitch is over. This is where the cool stuff starts.
Yeah, so just a starting point for our history in accident prevention and road safety. It's a proud and a long history, and we've really been part of something which has seen road trauma, particularly the number of lives lost on our roads, continued downwards. And it hasn't been easy. It's been a lot of interventions, a lot of change for the Victorian community. But you can see here the downward trend in terms of fatalities. We started in earnest in that sort of that speed cameras in 1986. That's sort of when the TACs Act was formed, and 87, 88 we started to invest, and that was our first major investment, is road safety cameras. And then we continued to either support or heavily invest in road safety right through to this day. And you can see it's getting harder. Our first gains, there were some golden bullets. There was opportunities to really make a difference. And now we're talking about major changes to get very small changes in terms of the number of people being killed on our roads. But there's still more we can do, and that's part of our story today. I'll move on.
So our strategy, the Make Everyday Matter strategy, has four pillars, and they make reasonably logical sense. For whatever we can't prevent happening in safe to travel, Sam, our people at the clients division will swing into action with sort of expert interventions, as expert as possible, to achieve the best possible outcome for that client, enabled by this high-performing ecosystem and our in-house claims model and our partners, and that's in service then of the financial sustainability of the scheme. And so this presentation aims to sort of show that inextricable link between, you know, the first and the last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the ecosystems we work in are very much what supports us to do our work, and so that's in both our client area but also in road safety. In road safety, we can't do it alone. The TAC is primarily an investor but also has a role of directly promoting road safety, and we do that in a very formal partnership. So the key agencies in road safety, led by the Department of Transport and Planning, but involving the Department of Health, Victoria Police, and the Department of Justice and Community Safety, who run our camera program. So that's our speed cameras and distracted driver seatbelt cameras in Victoria, work in a very formal arrangement with formal governance to ensure that we have coordination and no duplication in terms of road safety. So every dollar invested is invested well, not just for ourselves but other agencies as well. The other thing is, and I think it's really pertinent today, having just come from the plenary, is that we're working together on the same evidence base. So we're trying to solve the same problems. We're all working towards the same aim, and sort of hearing about the disconnect in some areas of disability is there's so much opportunity, I think, there. And this wasn't always the case. I think the other area that when we talk about the system we work in, the philosophical system we work in road safety, it's called Safe System. And it looks at all elements of the road network. So we look at the roads, the cars travelling on the roads, the people using the road system. And the fourth pillar is very much about the speeds we travel, the energy in the system, the speeds we travel at on the roads. But there's another pillar when you look at what the World Health Organization considers an intervention for road safety, and it's called post-crash care. And it's something, and it's really the intersect between Kath and I in terms of what we're doing and who owns and where the demarcation lines are. But it's really this.
Surely we just link arms, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. We internally link arms, but yes, but there's opportunity. And it's an area that TAC's heavily invested in the past, and I think it's our next area. So Kath will talk about that a bit later. But I think the key here is that we know we can't do it alone. As one agency, we need to work with others, and we need to work in an evidence-based way, and we need to acknowledge what everybody's got to offer in the system.
I think the key thing for me too, Sam, is that we are, while we are not the lead agency, we do have all the data and we have the funding. Mm. And so therefore we have 40 years worth of expertise in this. So we have, if not us to sort of invest and help support the coordination, then who?
Yeah. So I think just to bring you into the picture of where we see ourselves in terms of the TAC and where we invest, and you would have seen on that Lives Lost graph some of the things we work in, but community education, so educating the community about road safety, what matters, what they should care about, what the big issues are that are driving deaths and serious injury on our road. Health initiatives, which is fairly much what I was just talking about, where we can particularly intervene almost at the roadside immediately post crash and getting people to the hospital. Our biggest investment is in TAC is in infrastructure. And in fact, I joined the TAC as an economist to evaluate the very first, what we call accident black spot program in the very early 90s. And we've continued to invest heavily in that, and we'll talk about that as one of the case studies. We've actually pretty much funded most of the trials and the implementation of road safety cameras, so speed cameras, red light cameras, distraction cameras in Victoria, and we heavily support Victoria Police to do extra enforcement, but also with equipment. So technology to make their jobs easier and more efficient and more just for the Victorian community. And then there's a range of other initiatives that we invest in terms of more on the rehabilitation side, which I think...
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where sort of leading into then where next for us, which is at the end, but I guess in that red line, which is now, you know, my privilege to sort of lead and influence, Sam shares with me that the TAC funded Victoria's first MRI. And that we paid for several helipads because, you know, someone needs to be extracted from a crash. They have to be able to land at the hospital.
And there was a, you know, it's a really good example because we had what we call an evidence base, and it was a major report delivered to Victorian Emergency Service and insurance agencies at the time to say there's this golden hour. We've got this opportunity in the first hour post-crash as to how things are going to go in terms of severity of injury and whether you live or die. But there was no investment in that. And so, yes, one of the things we did was create a major trauma system for Victoria and invest in helipads, one of them which goes over a major road in Victoria.
But since then, though, we've invested between $5 and $8 million a year in research. We've got the head of research in the room with us, and that's been really helping inform this amazing data evidence base that we have. But I think it's time for now our next iteration.
Mm. So, why is investment in road safety important? I think the moral imperative is always there, and it's why schemes like ours exist in the first place in any case. But not only do we have the opportunity to save lives and avoid very serious injuries, but we have the opportunity to reduce the number of claims coming into the TAC scheme. And in doing that, obviously help with the sustainability of the scheme long term. I think we also help the Victorian community in reducing the healthcare burden, so that the burden that could be possibly on it in terms of looking after injured people long-term is freed up to support other parts of the healthcare system, and particularly beds in hospitals. I don't need to tell you how much injury and losing life costs in any state and around the world. But, you know, we paid out $1.8 billion last year to support 44,000 clients, it's a huge number, and it's a huge number in terms of monetary terms, but it's a huge number in terms of the number of people in Victoria that have been injured. And it's a direct cost to the scheme, but a direct cost to the Victorian community, whose families, friends, etc., as well as the healthcare system, need to continue supporting it. But one of the key things is the people who are paying to support the 44,000 people are Victorian motorists, the people who pay registration and premium on every vehicle they own to support the scheme. And what we've seen over time is that we've been able to keep that premium down. Like, it's one of the lowest in Australia, but lowest for offering one of the best, I think, compensation schemes in terms of a complete no-fault scheme, as well as the add-ons of common law, etc., but also very high levels of care, which we hope to keep on improving. But it's also offered the opportunity to keep on investing in road safety. So it's a sustainable investment in road safety, a sustainable investment in the scheme. And hopefully we really keep that long tail going. You can just see here that we've just sort of looked at our insurance ratio, our insurance funding ratio on the graph up here. And, you know, our idea was to be keeping it up somewhere near 145%. And if when we looked at investing back in basically 23, 24, we started looking at an investment package for road safety. It was a fairly large package. I won't say how much it was, but it went north of $1 billion. And what we were trying to understand is what was the benefit to the scheme of doing that. And we saw with the investment levels that we currently had in road safety at that time, we were not actually going to get anywhere near that 145% ratio that would be our preferred ratio. But if we did invest and we got to not only we invested to get to what was our then target for the state, which was halving lives and reducing serious injuries by 2030, that you could see it substantially improved our bottom line, basically, for the state. And the really interesting thing is this graph ends at 2030 when the investment package ended. But if you look beyond this, this continues to be cumulative because most of what we invest in is sustainable. It doesn't disappear when we stop investing. So if you think about something like infrastructure, once we put infrastructure out there, it's there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If there is maintenance for that infrastructure, we incorporate that into the investment costs. So that is already incorporated into that. There shouldn't be any other major costs to the TAC scheme or actually to the Victorian community of those types of investments. And that's what's important. We don't want to be investing. And I'll just give you a quick example. If we invest in extra enforcement, so police officers doing more than they would normally do under BAU, the minute we stop that, the benefits start to dissipate. And over a few years, we see them completely dissipate. We actually saw that during our COVID lockdowns. Behaviour really regressed, particularly around drink driving and drug driving, because people knew that the booze buses that we funded were being used as outposts for COVID. And so they knew they couldn't be out there testing people because they were being used clearly on the news pretty much every night for something else. And so it's a really good example of thinking what you're going to invest in, even though sometimes you might get a very good early return on something like heavy investment in police activity on the roads. We'll quickly cover this one.
Yeah, Sam, so this one, I love to see the work that you've saved us in claims, and thank goodness for the, you know, number of families that still have their loved ones and the number of Victorians that have not, 86,000 people who have not experienced a serious injury. But I'm fascinated by how explicit those lives lost are. 4,300 to 4,400. That feels like a very specific number.
Yeah.
Why is it that number?
Let's put it this way, that I didn't do this modelling. But I think one of the things that really surprises people is how we go about our road safety investments. And what we actually do is look at the crash pool. So we look at the number of fatalities and serious injuries in any one crash pool. So let's just say we're looking at drinking and driving. And we look at that pool and say, what interventions have we got at hand that could intervene with that? And say, whatever, let's just say it's a wire rope barrier that might do it. And we say, and then if we use that intervention, how many of those lives would be saved and where? So it's not just about that intervention, it's about specifically, and we're going to use an example a bit later of barriers, but for example, on the Hume Highway, we used to be getting about 12 to 13 deaths per annum on the Hume Highway from Melbourne to the Albury-Wodonga border. And say, okay, we actually know we could prevent every one of them and we sort of know how. So it's actually very specific, and we actually then count back to say, how have we saved that particular death? So universities actually help us get to say, okay, individually, how have we saved, what deaths have we saved that would not have been had those interventions not been there. I don't know. It is quite a specific number. I don't know whether it's really that accurate, but I think it would be relatively accurate when we see countries that haven't been able to implement the same sort of level of intervention as we have historically.
The other thing for me here is you've already mentioned, so we probably don't need to talk about it again, but on the right-hand side is essentially the impact of the on the average premium. And you can see the sort of numbers up the top there. On average, 402 versus 734, if not for the prevention now. And so Victorians are grateful for that. Sam, the main thing then I'm excited about here is the way you're turning your mind now to the prevention of serious injuries. So I think the historically we've been really around the globe preventing deaths wherever possible, but I think that what you've shared with me now is that Victoria, and you know, led by you, now really focusing on that, how we prevent major brain injuries, yeah, and like in a far more specific way.
Well, yeah. So one of the things that in early days, in a way, I talked about golden bullets. There were a lot of interventions that could achieve a lot without too much concern about the level of intervention. So when I say the level, the cost of the intervention, we knew we were getting BCRs of, 10, 12 to 1 easily without sort of too much thought about it, because there was just so much opportunity. And these days we started to see that, things we wanted to do weren't even getting a positive BCR, so we were sort of getting a 0.5 to 1 down a bit further. Not for everything, but some things. And we're starting to think, why is this? And it's because we primarily were looking at fatalities and saving fatalities. One of the things we did was a huge amount of work to better understand what was actually costing the scheme and trying to find a proxy that we can measure that easily when we're looking at road safety interventions, and talking also to, and we've got two of our ex-board members here, but, talking to the board and talking to the people who are our government, our ministers, who were going to really be the people approving investment. And so we started, we looked for a proxy, and it was MAIS 3 Plus turned out to be the best proxy. And so we've
which
actually
is a major
abbreviated injury score. Sorry, but I'm sure people know exactly what I'm talking about. And we looked at even within that, is what level? It's actually a measure of how close you are to death, which is, you'd think, it's not the greatest measure, But really, in terms of injury severity, it's enough. It's a close enough proxy for us to use. But what it's really meant is been really able to now hone in for the TAC on where we invest money, because these are the few claims that cost us the most, sort of around 1,200 claims a year. So you can almost, like fatalities, where we look at them individually and say, how do we prevent that fatality from happening again? We're starting to look at our MACE claims in the same way. How do we make sure that very serious injury doesn't happen again? So there's just this, I suppose there's an opportunity now for us to move the next step, and it's where the TAC's highest costs are.
Thank you. Should we go to some case studies, Sam?
Oh. Yeah. Actually, I'll just quickly mention this. What we primarily invest in is initiatives that give us a very good return on investment, similar to investing in other places an insurance company would, such as the stock market. But sometimes you need to invest in enablers, and what the TAC has managed to do very well, even though it's much more difficult to provide an actual BCR, is educating the community. And I talked a bit about this before, about our role in public education and engaging the community. But we have become their trusted partner in road safety. We have a huge amount of credibility. We do a lot of market research. And it just amazes me the things that people will say. It's like, well, if the TAC said that, it must be true, because we might not like what they've got to say, but we believe that their evidence, their work is credible. What it's enabled us to do is get ahead of the curve sometimes. We've been able to implement change relatively early because people believe what we've got to say. Again, may not like it. We still may have a bit of community outrage, but it's not that they don't believe the evidence base. So,
Sam,
yes, case studies.
I sent you a tweet, or maybe it was a little image of Donald Trump complaining about how ugly road barriers are and how they're always really unattractive. Could you tell me why we actually think they're beautiful?
Piece of infrastructure. We couldn't live without them, literally, sometimes. Barriers have really become almost our saviour in road safety. And when I started in road safety, we had this thing called the clearance zone. So what we know, and it's still to this day, because in every jurisdiction in Australia, we have huge road networks. We have more kilometre of road per person than pretty much anywhere else in the world. It means we have to maintain that. So when you hear about potholes, et cetera, part of it is because we've got a huge network, but we also have to try and keep it safe. And that's huge investment if you are wanting to keep the entire road network as safe as possible. We know that particularly in rural and regional areas, about 60% of our fatalities and just a little bit less of our serious injuries come from people running off the road, either coming off at the left and often going in trees, or going down an embankment and in rollover crashes, or crossing the centre line into another vehicle, or sometimes also into a bridge or a tree or something. Usually, because we're talking about rural roads, they're travelling at least 100 kilometres an hour. Even if they're travelling at 80 kilometres an hour, it's very hard to survive. So most people don't survive if that type of crash happens at speed. And even if they do, they're very seriously injured. So they end up costing our schemes a lot of money. We've known this for a long time, and we had resistance from our then agency to do much about it. So they had this thing called the clearance zone. And what that means is we would clear between 20 and 40 metres of the roadside from trees or other major hazards. And we'll assume that it's basically a bit like Pareto's principle, where 80% of people will survive if we do that. So only 20% of people are likely to be killed or seriously injured if they come off the road. It was just, when you think about it now, it's basically we knew we were going to kill or injure people, and that's what we did. Interestingly, it had both environmental impacts as well as road safety impacts, because the trees we were clearing to do that were often very historic and the last of our sort of our native trees in Victoria. So we were really wanting to say we want to stop what we call black spot treatments, which is if somebody had a crash there, we might then put up some barrier or some other protective treatment and move to a systematic treatment where we knew there was high risk of people coming off the road, and particularly where there were high volumes of traffic, which basically increased the number in terms of the risk in terms of numbers, we wanted to put full barrier systems. We started, so we had resistance after doing this. Black spot treatments and clearance zones were fine. We didn't need to do anything else. And we thought, well, okay, how are we going to handle this? And so we looked at some areas of high trauma, so lengths of trauma, kilometres of high trauma areas in the east of Victoria, in it's called Gippsland, and two of the major roads there. And we did two things. One road we just put out as a trial, continuous barrier, paid for it completely, and we paid for what I call a gold-plated treatment. So we did everything that the roads agency asked us to do. And then, very controversial, and it took us about 2.5-3 years, we put what they call medium barrier. So you would probably have seen this pretty much all over Australia now, where we put a particularly a wire rope barrier down the middle of a road. So where we couldn't build duplicated freeways, we put a barrier down the middle of the road to stop people crossing, departing their lane to the right. So particularly stopping head-ons, but also other types of crashes. Interestingly, that area was not only high for sort of motor vehicle passenger crashes, which is typically our typical client base comes from passenger vehicles, but also motorcycle crashes, because we wanted to understand the impact on motorcycle crashes. It was highly successful. Have a guess what? There were no dramas. It was fine, and we could see immediately that we were stopping serious injury and fatality crashes. Move on a few years, when our next big investment in infrastructure came, road safety infrastructure came along, we agreed and worked with the Department of then, we moved to Department of Transport now from Vic Roads, to cover all of our major highways between Melbourne and our regional cities. So Melbourne and Geelong, Melbourne and Bendigo, Ballarat, etc., to say these are our highest risk areas, we've got huge traffic volumes on these roads, we're going to invest to make them safe. And we also did at the same time the entire Hume Highway from Melbourne to Albury-Wodonga, with just a few little exceptions, but we've pretty much done it. That investment concluded, it sort of started in about 2015, we started the rollout, it concluded with the last rollout in 2022, We've been monitoring, so this is not a full evaluation. It's a monitoring exercise at this stage. We need about 4 to 5 years of after data, so after we've rolled out, to do a full evaluation. But you can see there in the impact, 49% fewer lane departure casualties, and to be honest, most of those we get are pretty minor injuries, not huge costs to the scheme or to the individual. 77% fewer fatalities, 94% fewer serious injuries, which we measured by the MACE 3 plus proxy. And one of the other measures, we were looking for other measures to help us understand impact on the scheme, was percentage of people who are having hospital stays, and so 74% fewer hospital bed days, so huge. Yes.
Now, I'm going to guess that we're running out of time. Well, I'll look, but we won't we've do got this five, one. But I think this one's just a really interesting one. You don't love me saying this, but I guess please put your phones down. It's the sort of modern day drink driving. What do you say about that, Sam?
Look, the jury's a little bit out. Given the number of people using mobile phones in their cars, we're probably not seeing the commensurate level of rise in injuries from that. However, we do think there's an increased risk, and general distraction, not just mobile phones, is a major issue. I think the advent of Bluetooth has really helped us. As a quick analogy, when you're drinking and driving or taking drugs and driving, you are impaired. when you're using a phone, you're distracted, but usually you're quite, cognitively, you're still quite active because you're engaging with something. So once you realise something's going wrong, you can respond a lot quicker than you can with drink driving, as an example. So we think that that's really the differential. It's not that people aren't distracted and not necessarily looking at the road, it's disaster, but once they realise something's going wrong, they're in a really good position to respond.
Okay, fine, I accept that. But nevertheless, one in five people who die on the roads are not wearing their seatbelts. So please resume wearing your seatbelts. They were the like, leading cause of the reduction, the early reduction in prevented deaths. Yeah. So, yes, avoid of head-on at over 80 k's, over 70 k's an hour. Please wear your seatbelts, put your phone down.
Yeah.
We'll and then the what's next, Sam? And well, then I'll talk just for one minute about claims.
I think this is just another case study where we saw an early opportunity. If you ask me today, where is the future for road safety? It's in vehicle safety. I talked about the fact that we have the highest level of kilometres of road per person pretty much in the world. There's just a few jurisdictions that have more than us. We're never going to treat the entire road network with infrastructure that keeps it safe for everyone. What we can do, though, is everybody pretty much will be who's going to cause injury, almost everyone anyway, will be driving a vehicle, investing heavily in vehicle safety. The earlier we can get safe cars onto Australia's roads, it's not just Victoria, we need this to happen Australia-wide, the better. And we need to create demand for that. And so to do this, and this goes right back to the very early 2000s, we created a brand and worked with our crash testing agencies, Australasian New Car Assessment Program and the Used Car Safety Ratings Group, to actually publish all their ratings and promote them and tell people not all cars are created equal. Next time you go to buy a car, look at the safety rating. And we have like seen quite a big uplift in that. Other jurisdictions apart from Victoria now use that website where we send people. I think the big one, though, for us is when we first started out, one of the things we pushed was head protecting airbags. So these are the side airbags that go along the top of your car, which most people will never have seen in action because the type of crashes are fairly rare. But what we did when we actually looked at the TAC data post-implementation across Victoria, it was about 75% of vehicles, new vehicles then had it. We saw a 61% reduction in head trauma and some thorax trauma as well to the scheme. When you start to think particularly about ABI and how much that costs compensation schemes, that was a game changer for us in terms of understanding another intervention apart from infrastructure that we could invest in terms of a sustainable intervention.
Thank you, Sam. So we will. I'll wrap up now because we're going to run out of time. But I guess what I saw coming into the TAC is that incredible initial chart that you saw in that power of investment coordination, great use of data and smart intervention to reduce deaths. Then I saw and learnt about how we were getting we were keeping people alive on the roads, but then they weren't having great outcomes from their hospital stay. And Sam mentioned before about that incredible coordination. And same approach here, right? That incredible coordination and investment and best use of data to achieve the best hospital life discharge outcomes in the trauma system. And so the thing then is, well, what once people are through the hospital system, and that's this little chart here. So if we go, here's prevention. I've sort of bigged up our bit for this image, Sam. Sorry, but you know, here's prevention. Of half an hour of conversation there.
Here's
the trauma system. But then we're now looking at the next horizon for us is, well, then how might we take the same approach? How might we use 40 years of data, you know, a significant opportunity of that investment to coordinate, to improve the outcomes for clients through the rehabilitation hospital system, through their discharge and into rehab in the community. And I think that, you know, if not us who, and if not now, when. We have 7,000 lifetime clients since the beginning of the scheme. It is about a $10 billion liability. Sam's doing everything in her power to prevent the number of new clients that we have coming in the door, but then are we, can we sort of stand hand on heart and say we're doing everything in our power to now protect and promote independence for clients into the future with such major and catastrophic injury? I don't know if we can yet, but we will. And so here's my invitation. As Sam's described, we can't do any of this alone. None of it has just been the TAC, but we've played an opportunity in coordinating and investing and informing and educating. And so, you know, I guess anyone who wants to be part of this next horizon for us in severe care reform, you're welcome at the table. I encourage anyone who's around this afternoon to see Kylie and Claire's presentation on the same thing, where there's a lot of us working in this space, and we're looking forward to, you know, in a couple of years to hopefully having a similar type of story we can tell about client outcomes with severe injuries. But
yeah,
that's it for us today. Thank you for coming.
Now, I'm going to steal just 30 seconds. Now, this is going to need to be short, sharp and succinct, a response here. What is your favourite road safety measure? All time.
Infrastructure.
I say speed.
Okay, and the last
reduced
one.
Speed.
And the last one, considering the increasingly available safety features in modern cars, you mentioned this before, Sam, is there more work that can be done with car manufacturers to push this further, or even better, mandate further safety measures along similar lines to emissions requirements and things like that?
The answer is yes. We certainly have a lot of opportunity through regulation. Vehicle manufacturers are doing the work. They have huge research programs. Unfortunately, not everybody is encouraged to bring the safest cars, particularly into Australia. You look at the Latin American market, you look at the Asian market, we're not getting the same quality of cars as the North American market, or particularly the European market, where the EU sets standards for the entire EU. So you can go into one of the lowest income countries in Europe, and you will still have a car with the basic safety feature because it's mandated.
So please use howsafeisyourcar.com.au. It will help you buy the safest car you can afford.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sam and Kat.